Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special episode of Kidney Compass coming to you from San Diego at the American Society of Nephrology Kidney Week. We're really lucky today. We've got Professor Hitto Heerspink with us, who's going to talk to us about some late-breaking clinical trial results, which he presented yesterday. My name's Brendan Nguyen. I'm a nephrologist and trialist from the George Institute from Sydney, Australia.
And I'm Shika Wadwani. I'm an associate professor at the University of Texas Medical Branch. As Brendan said, we're thrilled to have Dr. Hitto Heerspink here, and we also want to congratulate him on this incredible, Feldman Young Investigator Award. So Hitto, congratulations to you and for all the incredible work that you've done within our field. It's been, a big year for you, and here at ASN, had multiple, late-breaking presentation. So today we would really love to hear from you about your incredible work with semaglutide, and we'll start by letting you introduce yourself to our audience.
Thank you very much for the congratulations, and I'm still a young investigator, and I'm very happy about that. I'm a clinical trialist. I'm based at the University Medical Center Groningen, that's in the northern part of the Netherlands, and I have a position at the George Institute for Global Health in Sydney. And as I mentioned yesterday, that's the country where I really like to live as well. So I'm very glad to have that position at the George Institute.
I appreciated the shout out yesterday, the advertisement for Australia, which was nice.
I can't wait until I get to make my way out there.
Yeah. So Hitto, maybe you could start off by giving us a little bit of background about why you did SMART. Like, what's the evidentiary basis for semaglutide in people without diabetes in general so far?
Well, I started to think about the SMART study in March 2020, when we were in lockdown, in COVID, and I had nothing to do. And I thought, and we were working on SGLT2, DAPA-CKD publications, and where we transitioned dapagliflozin, a diabetes drug, to non-diabetic CKD. And I thought, perhaps we can do the same with the GLP-1 receptor agonist. And at that time, I thought maybe we should do a clinical trial with semaglutide in non-diabetic kidney disease to generate initial evidence that semaglutide can also protect the kidney in non-diabetic CKD. The timing was extremely good, because at that time, it was still possible to submit a proposal to Novo Nordisk to get study medication, because the semaglutide supply nowadays is very difficult because everything is used in clinical practice. 4 years ago, they still had medication available for clinical research. So in the first week of COVID, I wrote the application. I sent it to a few people and they said, this is a nice idea. And we sent it to Novo Nordisk for funding. And within a couple of months, it was approved and we could start the study. Took a little while because of COVID and other things. So we started recruitment, I believe, in October 2022, and we finished recruitment in April 2023 or so.
And I thought that was quite recent, Hitto, because there was no data from any non-diabetes studies yet in terms of albuminuria lowering or kidney outcomes, right, in 2020.
Correct, not in that population. Yeah. So this was completely new. And in addition, there were a few studies done in obese individuals with type 2 diabetes where semaglutide, the 2.4 milligram dose used for weight management, was used. But albuminuria was only measured at baseline and then after a year or after 2 years follow-up. And none of the studies had actually assess the time course of the effect on albuminuria. So during the uptitration phase, what happens with albuminuria? How long does it take for the drug to have a full effect on albuminuria? Is the effect reversible if you stop the drug? So all these aspects around the albuminuria time course and variability or reversal of effect after stopping are now assessed in SMART.
So can you tell us a little bit about the study population in the SMART trial and how that may differ from, other studies looking at semaglutide?
Yeah, so first of all, this was a study in patients without type 2 diabetes. So we enrolled adults with chronic kidney disease without type 2 diabetes. And it was a relatively broad population. So they could have an albuminuria level between 30 and 3,500 milligram per gram creatinine, a very broad range, because we wanted to assess the effects at different levels of albuminuria, and that's why we choose a very broad range. They had a GFR of 25 and a diagnosis of chronic kidney disease. In the end, we enrolled people with hypertensive CKD, obesity-related kidney disease, but that was reported by the investigator. We still don't have a formal definition for obesity-related chronic kidney disease. And then there were a number of patients with hypertensive chronic kidney disease, again, reported by the investigator, because we can discuss what actually hypertensive CKD is. People with an HbA1c above 6.5% were excluded. So we enrolled pre-diabetic patients, and those with pancreatitis were excluded as well because of safety reasons.
And there were about a quarter of people with glomerular diseases as well, too.
And
were those patients, they were chronic glomerulonephritis, not on immunosuppression, or they could have been on whatever their underlying...
It could have been whatever their underlying medication pattern was. However, none of them were on immunosuppression.
And in terms of the high-level results, you know, large reductions in albuminuria overall, about 50%, is that right?
Yeah. So the baseline albuminuria level was 250 milligram per gram creatinine median. So about 50% of the population had an albuminuria greater than 300, and the others between 30 and 300. 101 participants included. Mean GFR, 59 mils per minute. Mean body mass index, 36.2, very big population. And indeed, after 24 weeks of treatment with semaglutide, the albuminuria levels fell by 52% compared to placebo. Very nice effect, because in the placebo group, you really didn't see any change over time in albuminuria. And then in the semaglutide group, very, very large reduction, 52%. Interestingly, during the washout, albuminuria reversed a little bit towards the baseline, but not so much, probably because of the long half-life of semaglutide, about a week. But I think there may also be structural effects of semaglutide on the kidney. We don't know. But the remodel study is ongoing. It's a study where biopsies are assessed during treatment with semaglutide, and that will give us more information about structural effects of semaglutide, but then in type 2 diabetes.
And so, Edo, the dose that was used in the studies, the 2.4 compared to the FLOW trial, can you comment on if you think that the relationship with UACR reduction is dose dependent, and perhaps should we be using a higher dose even in our diabetic CKD population?
Yeah, and it's a very good question. So in the FLOW trial, semaglutide 1.0 milligram per week is used, and that's the dose that is indicated for the treatment of type 2 diabetes. And in the FLOW trial, you have patients with diabetes. Here we test people with overweight or obesity without diabetes. So we use the dose that is used for weight management, 2.4 milligram per week. And indeed, and that's why we tested albuminuria at every dose up titration step, you see a dose-dependent decline. So every time you up titrate the dose, the albuminuria level fell a little bit more. And so indeed, you could think about, well, a patient with type 2 diabetes and obesity, should we treat that patient with semaglutide 2.4? Because you want to manage the weight, you see more effect on albuminuria, more effect on blood pressure. So I think it's reasonable to use the higher dose. And you always up-titrate the dose. Mm-hmm. So you go from 1 to 1.7 to 2.4. 80% of the population reached the 2.4 milligram per week dose goal. Quite a large number of patients. But if the patient couldn't tolerate the 2.4, you could down titrate one step to 1.7. And perhaps for some patients, the 1.7 is perfect. Mm-hmm. Still more than one, and still more albuminuria though.
So most people got up to 2.4, you know? Okay. And another really interesting feature of the trial was that you not only looked at eGFR, but cystatin eGFR, and also measured GFR. And there's always been this question about whether or not changes in eGFR are related to changes in muscle mass. And it was really interesting to see in your publication how those GFR curves differed slightly. What's your interpretation of some of those differs that were then seemed to reverse in the creatinine eGFR?
So first of all, the creatinine eGFR showed a dip up to 8 weeks in the semaglutide group, and then it reversed during treatment back to baseline at week 24. that pattern is identical to the flow trial. Okay. Interestingly, cystat and EGFR didn't change at all over time. That is consistent with what I've just heard. Other studies with semaglutide where cystatin was measured, no change whatsoever in EGFR with cystatin C. And then when you look at measured GFR, a modest, non-significant increase of 1 mL/min in the semaglutide group, and in the placebo group in our trial, measured GFR increased by 1.52 mL/min, no significant difference between the two groups. So different patterns, I interpret the cystatin C and measured GFR pattern identical. And unfortunately, we didn't measure GFR at week 8 of the trial, only at baseline and at the end, because it's an invasive procedure. In hindsight, I would have loved to measure GFR at week 8 at the nadir of the creatinine EGFR. We don't know what this means, and we need additional studies where we measure multiple times over time iohexol or another filtration marker, GFR, particularly during that early stage, and combine it with, for example, bioimpedance spectroscopy so that we can look at lean mass, fat mass, and then do the correlations. And actually, we are designing that study right now.
Fantastic. So when we're thinking about, you know, people using this drug in clinical practice and when they should be rechecking. Now, let's say they're using creatinine-based GFR and we're titrating up. It sounds like it's better to wait several weeks so that there's not this concern about that dip in GFR. Now, we see this with SGLT2 inhibitors as well. Or it sounds like if you're just using cystatin C, if you have availability, you don't have to worry as much. But what are your thoughts about when's the right time period for, you know, a recheck in GFR so that people don't get too nervous about stopping the medication?
Yeah. So the dip in estimated creatinine GFR was only 1.5 mL/min. So it's a very modest dip. And I wouldn't be concerned about it because you know that the dip will reverse even during treatment. So I would, and with cystatin C, you don't see anything. So for clinical practice, I would just routinely monitor GFI as you would do in your clinical practice every 3 or 4 months in a patient with chronic kidney disease if you were to use this drug for weight management.
Mm-hmm. And Hitto, these are really interesting. I found the measured GFR and cystatin GFR really interesting. Where do we go from here in terms of GLP-1 receptor agonist trials across the spectrum of cardio-kidney metabolic disease? Do we need non-diabetic kidney disease trials specifically? How are we going to think about those trials going forward?
I think that we need additional trials, in particular trials that are looking at the longer-term effects of semaglutide in this population. We have to look at GFR decline over time, over two or three-year time period, or clinical kidney endpoints, because this was a study only 101 participants, 24 weeks of follow-up. So that needs to be confirmed. We probably also want to look at this drug in people with a lower BMI and non-diabetic kidney disease, perhaps not at a 2.4 milligram dose, but perhaps 1 milligram, maybe even 0.5 milligrams semaglutide dose. That would be very interesting to see what the effect is. If you look at our data, 1 milligram gave already a reduction of about 25-30% in albuminuria at the 1 milligram dose. So that dose reduces body weight by about 4 kilograms. So you could use that dose in non-diabetic CKD in people with a lower BMI. So these are, I think, my considerations, and it would be a trial I would really like to do, a longer-term outcome trial with semaglutide in non-diabetic CKD.
That sounds fantastic. And as you mentioned, you know, blood pressure reduction was a significant, you know, degree of blood pressure reduction, which is really exciting because a lot of these patients have underlying hypertensive kidney disease. As we're thinking about, you know, really these four pillars, and in patients who they do have a significant drop in blood pressure with semaglutide, do you suggest maybe lowering one of their other blood pressure medications? So a little bit of every drug is better than perhaps maximum doses of RAS inhibitors, SGLT2 inhibitors, GLP-1, et cetera?
Yeah, well, I think that you could you have to look at the drug and how many positive effects the drug has, right? So if you start this drug and you see the blood pressure lowering effect and the blood pressure becomes too low, you probably want to down titrate some of the other drugs. Calcium antagonists, so the first one that I want to down titrate, beta blockers, yeah, to accommodate the blood pressure reduction that you achieve with semaglutide in combination with an albuminuria lowering effect of semaglutide. What I found interesting as well was that the high sensitivity CRP fell by 38% in this population. Quite a big effect. We also saw a reduction in NT-proBNP by 40%. And that again links to the benefits that we have seen in people with heart failure. And probably these patients had heart failure in preserved ejection fraction or are at risk of heart failure in preserved ejection fraction. So this benefit on BNP is also very interesting, I believe.
Wow, that is, I didn't realize that, Hido, but that is a really interesting finding, the BNP finding.
Yeah, yeah, it's in the publication. Yeah, so, yeah, I didn't present it yesterday, yeah, but it was in the publication.
Any other thoughts or comments?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is extremely exciting because, you know, we know that this drug has really taken off in terms of treatment for patients who are overweight and or obese, and that we have the data in the, you know, diabetic CKD population. But this was that missing link of, can we use this in, you know, an overweight CKD population? And I think, you know, the data speaks for itself. It's extremely exciting. I, of course, as someone who focuses on glomerular disease, was really happy to see that there were patients with glomerular disease also included in this. And I'm, you know, looking forward to hopefully larger studies including this. But, you know, I think kudos to you for thinking of this work during COVID when everyone else was, you know, in a frenzy. To, you know, it sounds like you came up with this great idea and have executed it beautifully. And, you know, we're really excited to see what's to come.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you everyone for joining the latest episode of Kidney Compass, where we talk about the latest development in clinical trials in nephrology, from therapeutic advances to new methodologies. I'm sure this won't be the last time we'll have Hido on the podcast, so look forward to speaking to you soon, Hido. And tune in to wherever you get your podcasts and look forward to speaking to you soon. See you, everyone.